the hope for the future. Friends, this is what the kingdom of God is made of. Be a spiritual parent, mentor, disciple for destiny. Thanks for joining us. Get a copy of Larry's book, Authentic Spiritual Mentoring, Nurturing Young Believers Towards Spiritual Maturity. Your gift of $15 or more to Save America Ministries. We'll put it in your hands. Call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at Save America Ministries and become a partner with us, because day after day we're preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour. This is part of it here today. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. God bless you. Be a blessing and become a spiritual mentor.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Grismire. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily those of IR and its advertisers or affiliates.
This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you of the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Joyce Riley of the Power Hour. And Joyce has her own radio program every morning. She'll certainly tell you how to get in touch with her and in touch with her webpage. Certainly, she has a wonderful ministry. She and her husband do a great job of getting information about it. Out on just exactly the same things that we talk about. But Joyce is going to be speaking at the Conspiracy Conference. It's going to be held on the 7th and 8th of June here in the Central Coast of California at the Monterey Marriott in Santa Clara. That's the Monterey Marriott in Santa Clara. That's the 7th and 8th of June, Saturday and Sunday. And, of course, the telephone number to call to make reservations, 925-449-6844. That's 925-449-6844. In addition to Joyce, there'll be Jim Mars and Ralph Epperson and Barry Shamus, a frequent guest on our programs, and Clifford Connicom, and they've got a really great lineup of speakers there. I think it's probably one of the best lineups I've ever seen, and I will be there. I won't be speaking this year, but we basically have a I'm going to have to get our I'm going to have to ask. There we are. We're suddenly having a little cutting in and out of our conversation. Anyway, we will be there on Sunday. That's June the 8th. So if you're interested in going, why, we certainly want you to know about the program. But right now we're going to be talking to Joyce about the veterans. And she works with the veterans who are coming home. And what most Americans do not understand is that many of our veterans, when they come home from having fought in Afghanistan and Iraq, are ill. A significant number of them commit suicide every week, and you're not hearing about it. Many of them, of course, have committed terrible crimes of violence and murder and killed their people they love. Why? Because they've been put on Prozac, and Prozac produces homicidal and suicidal tendencies. And why are we putting almost all of our veterans, anybody who complains at all, immediately goes on Prozac, which doesn't do that much good if you look at the studies, comparing it with placebos, but it does a great deal of harm. And you can go onto their list of complications, look at their black box, and what do they tell you? Why, it produces suicidal and homicidal tendencies. And so many of these people, well, I'll let Joyce tell you about it, because she's on the front line dealing with these veterans every day. Good evening, Joyce. Thanks so much for being with us again. Joyce, are you there? Joyce, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go right ahead.
Okay, I can't hear you.
All right, fine. Well, we've got our producer is working, our engineer is working on the line. Can you hear me at all now, Joyce?
Okay, we got it. Thank you so much.
Go right ahead.
Okay. I didn't hear anything up to now, so I'm not quite sure what you're asking me to say.
Well, you just go ahead and tell us about the veterans when they're coming home and the problems they're having as far as suicide, as far as homicide, and the terrible plight of our fighting men.
Well, it's worse than we ever imagined, and it's worse than Gulf War I. And I don't think it's going to get any better because since there is no desire to return Iraq back to the people of Iraq, the desire is there to keep our military in a situation of readiness at all times. We're going to be having our troops exposed to more and more depleted uranium, which is the unfortunate problem that exists in the Middle East right now. When we look at what has happened in the first Gulf War versus the second Gulf War, we see not only a group of people who were harmed or...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Go right ahead, Joyce.
Not only do we see a group of people that were harmed or injured as a result of their service to this country, but we see a multiplicity of experiments that have been done on them, resulting in this depleted uranium exposure, which is the final, not experiment, but final... toxic exposure that they are receiving. We've got the immunization issue, which has been a huge, huge problem. We've got the continuous use of them as guinea pigs for proprietary pharmaceutical companies. We have the chemical biological exposures of the first Gulf War, and of course now the depleted uranium. And when we look at all of these together, we see the impact upon a military in which we have a shrinking military. You know, I talked to Senator Wellstone back in his office, and back in 1995, I believe it was, we were sharing information, and we were giving them information, they were giving us information. At that time, Dr. Wellstone told me that 90% of the military serving in Desert Storm had left the military as of 1995. 80 to 90% of our military had left. Now, that is so highly unusual, given the fact that you have an army that is supposed to be a trained army. You don't just have all of your people leave the military, exit from the military, and go about their business and do something else with their lives, because that leaves you with no senior trained officers, no leadership, and that's exactly what happened. But the world was not told about that. Certainly, this country did not know that we had lost a very major part of our senior military. Well, the same thing is happening today. More and more people are leaving early. They are desperate. They are sick. They are unfortunately attempting to try and get on with their lives as much as they can, and they're being left with no medical care, no treatment, no help, no nothing, and are getting worse. But now it's going to be at the public's expense. Not only public expense, but it's going to be resulting in suicides and homicides like we've never seen before. I talked with a troop the other day who was part of the 3rd Infantry Division, and he told me that he cannot find anybody else that wears the 3rd ID badge, or on his sleeve, the emblem on his sleeve. Cannot find anyone that served with him. And surprisingly enough, many of the units have disbanded to the point where they didn't want these men to be together with others of the like, other peers, so that they could compare their stories, compare what was going on. And thus you have really a scenario where we're waiting for a military to die, waiting for an army to die.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Joyce Riley. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joyce is talking really about the tragedy of our veterans. Now, most people out there in the listening audience are never going to hear what you're going to hear tonight, because after all, Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and the other establishment conservatives or liberals are paid fantastic sums of money not to reveal the truth, but to conceal it. Of the 695,000 veterans who came out of the first Gulf War, and we only lost about 100 men or so in battle. But, of course, we have the Veterans Administration statistics as of November of last year, which I got from Major Doug Rocky, and I actually pulled this down off the Internet from the Veterans site. Of those 695,000 men and women who were associated with Gulf War I, almost 80,000 are no longer living. Almost 80,000 are no longer living. That's over 10% have already died. They use these terms, no longer living, rather than died. That's a nice term. We will be glad to provide those statistics to anybody who wants to check it out. If that is really true, how could they conceal that from the American people? How could they conceal that many of those veterans, I mean at least a third, maybe even a half of them, are ill today from so-called Gulf War illness, which they deny exists? But it is a very real illness, and the studies have shown it's a real illness, and the doctors working for the government who've tried to treat it have lost their jobs. And the same thing is happening today, only, of course, with steroids. And, well, you go ahead and pick up the story there, Joyce.
Well, you know, the story is kind of coming full force right now to those of us who see what's happening to our military during the second experience of this. And it's only been, what, 16 years since Gulf War I. In 1991. And you know, Dr. Stan, we've sort of forgotten about that atrocious situation that occurred at one point to try and manipulate us into that war, and in which Naira, the young girl that was allegedly supposed to have been working in the hospital in Kuwait, where the Republican Guard came into their country, took the babies, threw them out of the incubators, threw them on the floor, bayoneted them, and then she tried to tell Congress or a committee of Congress that we need to go over there and we need to get Saddam Hussein because those Republican Guard were horrible people. Well, that was all a manipulated scenario by Hill & Knowlton Advertising Agency back in 1991 for $10.5 million.
In fact, she was the, Deborah wasn't in Kuwait at all when this supposedly happened. She was the daughter of the, as I remember, the Kuwaiti ambassador to the United States, and it was all contrived. But it was a heart-rending story, of course, that got the American people ready to send our boys over to fight and die to bring, of course, freedom to Kuwait.
You know, I remember that story, and I remember saying, that does it. I'm going to go back, and I'm going to go back to Kelly Air Force Base. I am going to go over there and do what I can. You know, that's the kind of feeling they want to bring out of people. And I had been out of the military or out of the reserves and was working in San Antonio, Texas at the time, or working in Houston at the time, and I went back to Kelly Air Force Base, Texas, and said, you know, take me in. I want to go. And that was a story that pulled at the heartstrings of so many people, and yet now we have learned how many of those scenarios have been utilized to try and manipulate the American people to get some kind of support for something which we would not otherwise support. When you think back to 1991, and that's within the realm of most people to be able to remember what happened then, we had a war with a country that evidently was doing some slant drilling. Kuwait was doing some slant drilling under Iraq. There were a lot of things that took place that we basically turned a blind eye with April Glaspie, who was our ambassador saying, don't worry about it, you know, we won't do anything, basically.
That's very basic. That's what she told Saddam Hussein. You go ahead. She said, we have no concern about a conflict between you and Kuwait. And actively giving him a green light to go ahead and do it. And then as soon as he did it, why, of course, then we had a justification to go to war. We needed a justification to go to war. And, of course, this wonderful story about the children being thrown out of the bassinets and bayoneted spread all over America, and it was all a lie. Like the Gulf of Tonkin incident was a lie, like the sinking of the Maine was a lie. I mean, you have to tell these stories. Like they lied to Pat Tillman's family about how he died, or Jessica, the girl who was supposedly, you know, there fighting to the last bullet and then taken captive by the Iraqis and rescued by the courageous Green Berets. And it was all a lie. There weren't any soldiers, even in the hospital, when they took her out of there. And she had excellent care from the Iraqis, the doctors had taken care of her. And she didn't fight, and she didn't have a gun, wasn't firing, killing the enemy. It was all a lie. As it's said in war, the first casualty is the truth.
And, you know, the other night I was on the BBC radio doing a program on City Talk, it's called, and we did an hour interview with a very professional group of journalists from the UK who were absolutely shocked at what I was saying. I mean, first of all, we talked about the reason that we went to war, what we were just talking about here, and how the U.S. manipulated that situation. Before we got manipulated into that war, I talked about how the United States started selling weapons to Iraq with all the fervor that we could by telling all of these countries, Iraq and other countries, by telling them that there was going to be some trouble over there. You had better protect yourselves and you'd better get armed. And so we trebled or tripled the amount of weapons that we were selling to the Middle East, to the other countries during that time, according to Jane's Defense Weekly. So the United States makes its money off of weapons. War is money. We have to have war. That's why we have George Bush, who is a war president. And so as I was telling the BBC my idea as to why we went to war and what occurred prior to that, which was the sale of those biological agents, chemical agents, according to 103-900, the Regal Report, that we had actually shipped anthrax in large volumes to Iraq, that the United States had shipped a West Nile fever virus to Iraq, which the United States had never even had an outbreak of West Nile fever virus until we shipped that to Iraq. Then Israel had an outbreak, and then we found out that our outbreak was very similar to the strain that was used in Israel. But what we have here is this giant manipulation of a world, not just the American military, but of a world. And it's continued on to this very date where we're now looking at, well, do we need to go into Iran? Well, that's a phony story, just as all the rest of the countries, because we've now seen where the weapons that have been found in Iraq were not made by Iran, as we had been told before. All those IEDs, where are those farmers making those IEDs in their garages is what I would like to know.
Well, you know, basically what was found was that there's a timer, some sort of a thing that sets off the IEDs, was manufactured in the United States and just accidentally shipped to some of the Arab countries over there along the Persian Gulf, and then somehow it gets into the hands of the Iraqi insurgents, and they're using the IEDs to destroy our boys. There are very effective, of course, special vehicles, armored vehicles, that are not injured by the IEDs, and Donald Rumsfeld refused to buy them. In fact, only, you know, 3 or 4 years into the Iraqi war did they finally begin to get some protection for our boys. In the meantime, so many of them were killed. So many of them, of course, have brain injuries or lost their hearing because of the IEDs set off by explosives, devices that were actually manufactured in the United States and just accidentally sent over to some Arab country. Just accidentally, of course. Nothing as it appears to be, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. But if we were to win the war, how could we then justify keeping our troops there indefinitely? And we know they're planning on keeping them there. They have the largest embassy anywhere in the entire world, right there in Baghdad in the Green Zone. Why would we be building such a massive embassy unless we were planning on staying there permanently? And if we were to win the war, how would we justify staying there permanently? So go right ahead, Joyce.
And so now we have just recently Iran ending their oil transactions in U.S. dollars. You know, Iran is OPEC's second largest producer, and they have, according to CBS News, completely stopped conducting oil transactions in U.S. dollars. And you recall, that's exactly what Saddam Hussein did before we decided that's enough. You know, we've had it with you. And now Iran has done the same thing, and it seems that that's a big part of why we go to war with people. Then you have, and I have to say, this was a big shock to me the other day, Christiane Amanpour on CNN. I was watching the news early morning about 5 a.m., and they were talking about the Myanmar disaster there with the cyclone that hit in Myanmar, or which is formerly Burma. And as I listened to her there, I could tell they were setting the stage for something. You know, you can feel by now when an agenda is happening.
Right.
And what was starting to happen was she was saying, well, you know, Myanmar is not welcoming the United Nations people with food. They won't let the people come in here and distribute the food. They just want them to leave the food at the doorstep and let the Myanmar people disperse the food. Well, that's their own right to do that, I would think. Then the next story was they won't let the United States fly food in. And the next story was they're keeping the good food for the elite and giving out bad, rotten food to the people. And I could just smell this agenda taking place. Next thing I hear her say, Christiane Amanpour on CNN says, I think perhaps it's time that we think about an aid invasion to Myanmar.
In other words, we're going to have to invade the country to help the country because,
that's
of course,
right.
They don't want our help because they don't trust the Americans coming in there for fear they're going to try to overthrow the government. And maybe it's a corrupt government, but remember, of course, we've been, we support corrupt governments all throughout the world. Why are we so worried about Burma? Go right ahead.
And so we have now an invasion for the good of the people there.
Right.
We're going to go invade them. We're going to destroy and kill because doing this for their own good. Then she says, well, perhaps we should do it like we did to Grenada and Haiti. We need to go in there and we need to help these people, whether they want it or not. And I'm listening to this, Dr. Stand, and thinking, oh, no, they're thinking about invading Burma.
Well, because basically preemptive war has been accepted by the United States, and we're perfectly at ease doing everything we can to build up the military and financial position of communist China, the most ruthless country in the world today. But we're concerned, of course, about what's going on in Burma. We'll be right back with Joyce. Go right ahead, Joyce.
And then as I listened to her say this, and she is justifying the reason why we should invade them, I started thinking, okay, now what is it that Burma has? What is it that Myanmar has that we might want as a country? Well, they're a petroleum-based country also. They also are in a good position where it might protect, or we might be able to utilize that country as a positioning for protecting Taiwan, if that were the case, if we needed to do that. So I now, every time I hear the news, I don't listen to the news. I start guessing what the news really means. Because it is truly a wag-the-dog scenario, just like the movie portrayed. It's a Hollywood creation. It's a manipulation of the American public. But it is our soldiers, truly, that are losing. And so we herald these soldiers. We treat them like heroes, at least in the parades that they have. And then we bring them back here, and we kick them to the side of the curb. And that's what's happening today. And that's why we can't get enough military. That's why the Army Times and Air Force Times is replete with stories about how they can't get more troops to join. What are they going to do? And then the next story that we see is murder, murder, suicide, suicide, murder, murder of people. And I've never seen anything in the Army Times or the Air Force Times like this. Every month, it's more and more bizarre murders where a family of four is murdered in the military on base, and it's kind of like, ho-hum, oh, well, another murder. No, there's something going on with these troops. There's something happening more than the fact that they went over there, got really depressed after seeing a war, and came back here and decided to kill their families. There's more going on here. And, of course, we know that it's the combination of the SSRI drugs and the neurological symptoms and neurological problems as a result of them having to serve in a theater of operation that is full of depleted uranium. This depleted uranium is destroying this section of the brain that supports the thought processes or judgment. So you have that coupled with an SSRI drug, and that is a perfect recipe for murder. And it's happening now in cases. All you have to do is go to the internet and Google Gulf War veteran and homicide, and you will be amazed at what comes up. So as I was also talking about this with the BBC, they seem to not know anything about depleted uranium. They seem to not know anything about the illnesses of our returning troops. And, of course, as we talked about the Coalition of the Willing, you know, the Coalition of the Willing now is all U.S. military troops, 160,000 military troops from the United States over there, and I think 4 Norwegians and 2 Panamanians. And that's all we've got. You know, that is the Coalition of the Willing. We were lied to about all of the people that supported this war, and now we don't even have the people from the U.K. They're pulling out almost on a daily basis. So it's just the United States. And yet we can keep this facade going that everybody supports the war. Well, we know 85% of the people are against it. They don't support it. And yet people are taking their tax dollars and saying, thou shalt not kill, here's my money to go do it. And I really, really have to look at the motivation of people in this country who are so willing to turn over that money every April 15th, not realizing that they are supporting a war machine. That is supporting the killing of people. And I'm not saying not to pay it. I'm saying that they should be addressing these issues to Congress.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Joyce Riley, Captain Joyce Riley. She's in the reserves. Are you still in the reserves, Joyce?
No, I'm not. I got a letter from the Department of Defense about 4 days after 9/11 that said, you're no longer needed. Thank you very much.
All right, fine. Well, of course, this is because Joyce has told the truth about what they're doing to our soldiers and to our servicemen and women. And let me point out that so many of our servicemen are coming home, and they're, of course, becoming suicidal, and well over 100 are committing suicide, what, about every week or so?
About 200 a week are committing
suicide. About 200 a week.
Now.
And then, of course, the other thing is the homicide. She suggests you go up on the internet and Google in, Gulf War illness homicide, or Gulf War veterans homicide, and you'll find so many of them are committing horrible acts of homicide. They don't even know what they're doing. And this is because, of course, they're being put on Prozac. And, of course, Prozac actually stimulates a homicidal and suicidal tendencies. And people take it. Doesn't do that much good, but, boy, it sure does a lot of harm. And then, of course, the other thing is that the depleted uranium that's poisoning them apparently has an impact on specific parts of the brain. And most people don't understand that we're poisoning not only our own troops, but the men and women and children over in Iraq by using a radioactive substance called depleted uranium. It's not depleted at all. It is solid uranium-238 with a little 235 in, mixed in. And certainly, basically, when you have the uranium, why they will actually refine it and take out most of the 235. But all the rest of it is pure uranium. And that is what, of course, once becomes a dust, it's inhaled by our boys, inhaled by the Iraqi people, with deadly results. So you pick up the story there, Joyce, because the American people do not understand that we're poisoning our soldiers and our women who are fighting over there. Go ahead.
I don't think parents realize that when they send their sons and daughters off to war, they're sending them off to be a part of a movement in which there is no concern for the troop when they return home. And they have to experience it to actually find this out, because nobody wants to believe that. They want to believe that, oh, this is the most patriotic thing to do. I love my country, therefore I must serve. And that's the way I believed also. I mean, I used to tell myself the one thing I wanted more than anything else in this world, if I were to be in my rocking chair and I was 85 years old, I wanted to look back and say, what one thing did I want to do? I wanted to be a flight nurse. I really did. And I got to live that dream. I got to experience that. And I lived, and unfortunately, it was a dream. It was a dream as to what I was really doing. Now, I didn't get involved in the war at all, and I didn't get exposed to DU. And I didn't get exposed on the battlefield because I only flew missions from Alaska to Cuba, Guantanamo, or to Spain. And that's where our missions were, because we were backfilling for the active duty nurses that had gone to Iraq and to Saudi Arabia. But our troops now are going over there, being exposed at very high levels to this depleted uranium, which is not depleted. That is the name that is used to fake everybody out so they won't think that there is a problem with this. And these poor parents that think they're doing the right thing are going to bring home sons and daughters that are going to be losing their ability to function very slowly over the next few years. And it breaks my heart, because I hate to have to tell them what is, and I don't do that. I don't tell them what is going to happen. But they do enough research themselves, and they can figure this out, and they find out that the depleted uranium is not a reversible issue. So we've got the depleted uranium from the food that they eat, the air that they breathe. You know, when you shoot off a rod of depleted uranium or of U-235, basically, such as the A-10 aircraft, and that's the one that flies over our house all the time from Whiteman Air Force Base. We have A-10s over our house all the time. They're very loud, they're very low, and they shoot a Gatling gun of 4,000 rounds per minute. 4,000 rounds of depleted uranium of 30-millimeter shell into the ground, into the homes, into the people, into the whatever they shoot it into. And it doesn't ever go away, at least not for eternity, 4.5 million years. So obviously it's going to be in our troops' brains, in their hearts, in their lungs, in their guts, and they're going to be feeling that as a result of eating, because it's going to be in the food supply, it's going to be in the water. And these troops are, I mean, I can't believe we are looking at just the murder of our own military right now, and no one seems to know, Dr. Stan.
Well, I think if the people out there listening, I hope you'll go up on the Internet and certainly look up a depleted uranium. What is the Trap Rock, what is that website that Doug Rocky refers to?
Trap Rock Peace.
Trap Rock Peace. Look at that website, and of course you want to get the DVD that Joyce has put out called, On Treason. Let's see.
Beyond Treason. Uh-huh.
Beyond Treason, and there you'll actually get a CD-ROM that has literally hundreds of pages of government documents telling how toxic the depleted uranium is, but they don't want the troops to know. I mean, would you want to go over and fight if you realize you were not only fighting an enemy on the other side, you were fighting an enemy who wanted to destroy the American military? Right here. We'll be back in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and Joyce, pick up the story from there.
When we're talking about DU, and we talk about the first Gulf War, I was talking about the amount of depleted uranium in the sand over there, 950,000 rounds, or about 320 tons of DU was during that period of time, 320 tons of depleted uranium. Now, during this war, we have no idea how much is over there. We know that it's probably 10 times that amount thus far. And when I was talking to the BBC, their concern was, well, if after George Bush left office from the first Gulf War, then Clinton, didn't Clinton do something about that? And I said, do you recall what happened in Bosnia in 1999? The U.S. military used DU again in the bombing of Yugoslavia. It was continued to be used by the U.K., the U.S., with no thought to the fact of the damage that it was causing in these people. And I have to add that there is now known to be about a 600% increase in cancer rates in Iraq as a result of what we have done over there, the incidence of leukemia, lymph cancer, all other types of cancers, not to mention the congenital deformities that have occurred over there. It's just unbelievable what we have done. And everything from the NATO round guns, the 7.65, 105-millimeter cannons, 120-millimeter cannons, 30-millimeter shells. It's just amazing now how everything contains, our weapons that we use, contain depleted uranium.
Well, I think it's important.
The problem is not just in Iraq. It's over here where those weapons are made, where they're tested, where they're fired, And that leads to a number of places that have been really pretty much made off limits as a result of the depleted uranium in this country. Then we go down to Puerto Rico, Vieques in Puerto Rico, and test it down there, and then we get kicked out of Vieques, Puerto Rico, because they start getting cancer and realizing what's going on. They use the Nevada nuclear testing site, the munition and testing area there, Jefferson Proving Ground in southeast Indiana. That whole area has been really destroyed as a result of depleted uranium because it doesn't go away. Now, General Kropinski, you'll recall her. She was the general in charge of Abu Ghraib and was involved in that great scandal. She was later demoted from general down to a colonel. And I talked to her off air, and I said, what did you know about depleted uranium when you were in Iraq? And she said, I had never heard of depleted uranium. There is a general.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joyce is talking about depleted uranium. You must understand that basically many of our heavier bullets, certainly our missiles, our bombs, they're all made up of depleted uranium, which, of course, after it's fired, certainly it'll go burn right to a tank. It catches fire, it burns into a tank, it'll go through any type of steel, and then, of course, it's erotically burning while you have a dust. And it's that dust that contaminates everything. Now, before we go on, Joyce, I'd like you to get your website and out there and tell people how they can get in touch with your ministry and how they can listen to your radio programs, too.
Certainly, and thank you very much for allowing me to do this. But because the Power Hour airs from 7 to 10 a.m. Central Time, and the Power Hour is all about the kind of things we're talking about here. I've been inspired so much by Dr. Stan in the past and what he has done, and I make it my goal, along with my husband, Dave Von Kleist, to try and continue to tell the world about these issues, and hopefully we can reach them one by one. And the Power Hour can be heard at 7.490 on the shortwave dial, or you can go to thepowerhour.com and read there the different places that you can hear the program. Also, beyondtreason.com are websites I would recommend, along with GulfWarVets.com. That's where you can really read about what the troops are saying that are returning from Iraq. That is basically a help site that we put up many years ago for the returning troops to get aid and comfort, really, basically from others that have been through the problems that they have experienced. So GulfWarVets.com is a very important website. I would also like to offer to anybody with an APO or FPO address a copy at no charge of Beyond Treason, the documentary that talks about these experiments that have gone on. I would also welcome anyone who wants to purchase one and perhaps give it to high school kids and let them see this before they make the decision to join the military, because I've got a lot of letters from people who said that Beyond Treason was the one thing that made their child make the decision not to join the military. If they want to join the military after they see Beyond Treason, well, so be it. But at least they know what to expect, and they know what they may be facing.
And I think it's so important that they have to understand that they experiment on our boys. They experimented on, they used experimental vaccines during the first Gulf War, but they've used our boys for horrible and grotesque experiments for years, whether it be radiation experiments in the Nevada desert or the experimental vaccines they gave them for flu and so many of them became ill that they had to actually abandon some of those programs. So much of this is covered in something called the Rockefeller Report. It came out of the Veterans Administration back in 1994. Joyce carries this. We do as well. And it simply lists so many of the experiments done not only on the American servicemen, but, of course, on the American public as well, without our knowledge or consent. Grotesque and horrible experiments that were carried out where many people became ill, but, of course, nobody even knows about them. It's a very important report. But go ahead, Joyce.
You know, I was talking earlier about General Kropinski, who had been the general involved in Abu Ghraib, and she unfortunately did not know anything about depleted uranium all the time that she was in Iraq. And when I asked her, when she returned, I said, what did you know about DU? And she said, absolutely nothing. Had never heard about it. And she said, and Joyce, now every time that I cough, I wonder, is that the depleted uranium? And she said, I think about all my men over there, and I think of all the men that may have been exposed to this, all the men and women, when in reality, you know, we were the ones in charge, and we knew nothing about it. And how dare they allow us to keep our men in an area that they could become so ill. So if even the generals didn't know what was going on, it's no wonder that these poor grunts and these infantry troops and the people on the ground, the troops on the ground, have no idea what they are being exposed to.
Could we just briefly mention what happened after we blew up the dumps that contained the chemical and biological warfare material during the first Gulf War? Remember, after the first Gulf War, we were told none of our troops were exposed to chemical weapons. Absolutely none of them. None of them were exposed. This is an official government position. Well, maybe 5,000 were exposed, maybe 10,000, maybe 50,000. Maybe 100,000. And then, of course, they coming home, getting very, very sick, because they've been exposed to chemical weapons, and they lied to the American people. And, of course, this organized program of lying, how do you get the American people to believe things that just aren't true? Well, you say them over and over again, and then you accuse anybody who disagrees of being unpatriotic, of not wanting to support our boys, whereas they poisoned the boys. Kamet Chair, well, I'm going to let you tell this story, Joyce, because you do it so much better than anybody I know, and how, of course, they actually blew up all these chemical weapons, and they put them into the atmosphere where our boys, of course, would be contaminated by them. Why would you blow up dumps that had chemical weapons in it when you knew that it would get into the atmosphere and contaminate our troops? It doesn't make sense, does it?
No, absolutely not. Well, you know, it even goes back further to where there was another operation called Nimble Archer. And I want to go back for a reason, because back in the 1980s, the United States started selling biologicals and chemicals to Iraq, because Iran was fighting Iraq, and Iraq had really been the aggressor in the situation, but Iran and Iraq were fighting. The United States had decided finally they wanted Iraq to win. So the United States started shipping biological and chemical agents to Iraq around back shortly after 1983. And in doing so, they did it under a project called Operation Nimble Archer. And that was a project in which an operation in which the U.S. government and our military began to train the Iraqi people on how to use chemical weapons. We would basically, we would sort of show them how to man their aircraft, do the nozzles on them, the aircraft to spray out the gases, and of course you have Halabja. You have a number of areas where the U.S. Stood back and just was aghast at what Saddam Hussein allegedly did to his own people. But that was done with the full direction of the U.S. government at that time. So then we move into the 1990s, when we're still shipping chemical and biological agents. And the best book on this subject is called Spider's Web by Friedman. And Spider's Web was taken off the market 2 weeks after it came out because they said that, the book wasn't selling very well, which is not the reason. But the U.S. is still selling these weapons to Iraq. Then we've got the war in 1991. We've got all these weapons in bunkers. And if you have a copy of Beyond Treason, in the CD-ROM, there's something called the Missing Gulf Link Documents, about 375 memos from the Joint Chiefs of Staff. You put in your CD-ROM into the computer, it will come up on the screen, the Missing Link Documents. Go to that, and you will there see, some of them are redacted, but it will show you the memos that came out of the Joint Chiefs of Staff office regarding these biological and chemical agents, where they were on the battlefield, because they could see them. They could see the bunkers with the satellites. They knew where the trucks were parked outside of them. They could sometimes say, there's two trucks parked outside of this bunker. Well, Saddam Hussein had hundreds of these bunkers all over the country of Iraq. A lot of them were in Nisiriya, or along the Euphrates River and in an area called Kamisea. These bunker complexes, in the one that was particularly called Kamisea, was about 100 bunkers and 60 warehouses, each the size of a Walmart, a super Walmart. It was huge. The 37th Engineer Battalion was tasked with the job to go in and detonate these bunker complexes. They were buried about halfway underground. You would go inside and you would see nothing but just weapons inside, because we have the video of that that appears on Beyond Treason, in which these troops went inside the bunkers, and what did they see but weapons made by the United States, made by UK and Russia, transshipped through Jordan into Iraq. All these weapons, they had to do something with them. And Sergeant Dan Topolsky was the one tasked from the 37th Engineering Battalion to go in and set the munitions that were going to destroy this area. Many of the troops that were there believed they were just shooting off conventional munitions, until they got inside, saw the chemical and the biological weapons, which you could note were colored by various bands around the weapons. So he came out and he called his commander immediately, a colonel, and told him that they needed to notify General Schwarzkopf or CENTCOM that there were chemical and biological warfare agents inside those bunkers, knowing that if they detonated them, that was going to put them all at risk. He contacted, the colonel did, General Schwarzkopf at CENTCOM, and was told by General Schwarzkopf, blow them anyway. That was the message received back to the 37th Engineering Battalion. So now you have a group of people who have to follow a direct order coming from the General Central Command, and they went ahead and detonated the weapons. Now this exposed over 100,000 troops to biological and chemical exposures, beyond which we can even imagine. Many of them began to get sick immediately. Many of them got sick later. But the Department of Defense denied over and over again that there was any problem whatsoever with the troops that had been in that area, even though many of them had been told, do not wear your MOP gear. In other words, don't go to MOP 4, which was the mission-oriented protective posture equipment, meaning the gas masks and the MOP suits. So they were exposed. They just were simply exposed. Everybody was exposed there. It took about a week to detonate all of those weapons. There were so many of them. But they were just explosions going off one after another. I've seen the film of it, and it's just continuous black smoke in the air. As a result of that, we had troops that began dying. Many of the infantry troops began dying. And some of the troops that I have visited in prison who have committed murders were there at that Kamacia site. Now, the interesting thing is they had categories of military, in the Air Force, it's the code for which they use for the military, as to whether they're infantry or whether they're whatever the military code is. Many of them had codes that were not infantry or not to do with weaponry. And so they simply told them, well, you can't be sick, you can't have a problem, because you were a cook or you were a communications person or whatever. But in reality, many of those people are ill also. And some of the people that I have visited in prison who were serving life sentences for murders were there. Most of them were there in the Kamacia area. So their brains were affected by the chemicals and biologicals that affected the judgment spot in their brain. Then you have them being brought back to the United States, not taken care of, but given these SSRI drugs, which then compound the problem. And like one man wrote to me, he said, you know, he said, I have to tell you, if I go in the grocery store and somebody lets the door hit me or doesn't open the door for me, he said, I feel like I want to kill them. What am I going to do? I got a letter from a 20-year police officer in the state trooper, and he said, you know, he wrote me a letter saying, sent me a picture of him with his uniform on, with his cruiser, and what he, you know, he was very official about it, and he said, I'm going to have to take my gun off. He said, because I'm going to kill someone, and I don't know why. After 29 years as a trooper, as a state trooper, I want to kill someone. And this didn't have anything to do with the fact that he'd seen war, because a lot of people that went to the war didn't see any kind of military action whatsoever. Some of the guys told me, they said, you know, all I did was ride around in the sand and play Game Boy half the war. He said, I never saw anybody kill anybody in 1991. He said, I didn't happen to be in that area. So it wasn't stress. It wasn't PTSD. He said, and now I throw up every day. I can't eat food normally. He said, something has happened to me, and they just want to tell me it's stress because of what I did during the war.
Well, of course, they used experimental vaccines. They used, of course, multiple vaccines. They give him 10 or 15 vaccines at one time, which attacks the immune system. Then they had the depleted uranium. And, of course, then they had the anthrax vaccine. And they destroyed the lives. They experimented on these young men. They destroyed their lives in that depleted uranium. They knew what it was going to do. And, of course, they keep saying, it's all in your head. You're just crazy. That's all the only problem you have. Here, take this Prozac. And, of course, Prozac does produce suicidal and homicidal tendencies. Go up on the Internet and Google in, of course, Prozac, homicide, suicide. You'll find it. In fact, if you do the studies, you'll find Prozac does very little good. It's almost as good as placebo, or the placebo is almost as good as the Prozac. I mean, maybe 1% difference out of 100. But, of course, it does, by elevating the serum serotonin level, create all sorts of mental abnormalities, and that's what they're giving to hundreds of thousands of our veterans who are coming back from the first Gulf War and the second Gulf War, and we wonder why so many are committing suicide. Go ahead, Joyce.
And some of them have been placed on 2 and 3 and 4 of these drugs. And the whole idea of using this psychological evaluation is almost used as a weapon against them, because once they made it mandatory that before you could be evaluated from the first Gulf War for any physical problems, you had to have a psychological evaluation done. 99% of the people had something that showed up on their psychological evaluation, whether it was serious or not, but they justified giving them the drugs and classifying them as a psychological or a psychiatric patient with whatever they found in this psychological evaluation. So people were then banned from being able to get good jobs. They had to carry that around with them. They were given the PTSD diagnosis, post-traumatic stress disorder, when in many cases was not justified. They were told, look, I'll give you a PTSD diagnosis of 100%, or I'll give you a fibromyalgia diagnosis of 10%, meaning that they would get 10 times basically as much money with the PTSD diagnosis. And I had a lot of the troops call me and say, should I take the PTSD diagnosis? And I said, if you do, just understand that it's going to classify you as a psychiatric or a psychological issue patient. And later on, there may be some concern about you being able to own a weapon or being able to get a job. And sure enough, it turned out to be true. But you see, that was the manipulation. Here's a little money with fibromyalgia, or here's a whole lot of money if you take this mental disorder. Well, these troops were desperate. They had no way to make a living. And so they took the 100%. And as a result of that, well, many of them can't function any longer anyway, and they're glad that they have the money. But imagine, though, putting our troops in the position. I mean, I said to the BBC the other day, I said 80% of our troops were either placed on or offered Prozac, Zoloft after the first Gulf War. Does anybody believe we sent 70% of our military that were head cases to fight that war? I don't think so.
The terrible tragedy is so many of the young men coming home from Afghanistan and Iraq today have, are seriously ill. At least 30% of them are ill within 3 months of their return, and the number grows all the time. They go to the Veterans Administration, and there are probably at least 400,000 cases pending before the Veterans Administration. All shucks, they just can't get around to it. If they do, they turn you down, and then you got to fight it for 5 or 7 years to get a disability. We are totally mistreating our veterans. And they say how valuable they are, how heroic they are, and then they're cast aside like an old shoe. Well, Joyce, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
You know, when we look at what's going on in this country today, I think the people themselves are going to have to begin to ask the questions, and I think they are asking the questions now. And I think that the U.S. government is in a defensive posture right now to try and protect itself, to protect the elite. And I think we're going to have to start seeing some things happen to challenge what is taking place. People are going to have to take a stand. They're going to have to back. They're going to have to see some resistance. We received some phone calls from some truckers. Amazing things are going on within the truckers right now. On Mondays and Fridays, they're doing slowdowns in New York City and Washington, D.C. Even the Secretary of Commerce had to address that on C-SPAN the other day by saying that they were affecting the traffic in D.C. Well, people are going to have to say not no, but heck no. You don't take my son or my daughter, you don't experiment upon them, and then you don't return them home to us. It's just basically a basket case. Because what's happening is they're refused military treatment, military care, military compensation. They become more ill. They don't have any insurance because they're a pre-existing condition from the military. And then they become homeless because their families finally have to basically get them away from the family because they're draining their expenses. They're draining their money. And they don't look sick, so they don't think they're sick. So they drive them away, and they become homeless. That's why we have such a huge population of homeless from Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom. And all I can say is if you're a Gulf War veteran, if you're a vet that wants to know more about this, go to GulfWarVets.com. If you're seeking compensation, look on the compensation portion of the board to try and get help there, because if you're turned down twice, you can get an attorney. But unfortunately, it'll take you 7 years to get turned down twice. And by that time, many of them are too sick to even fill out the paperwork or have the motivation to do anything after that. So we need to help these troops as much as possible. Unfortunately, the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, they are not there for these troops. And I've been dealing with them over the years and been sorely disappointed at the stand that they have taken. So it's going to be up to the American public to take care of their own, because basically they are discounted casualties now, and we have got to stop this waiting for an army to die.
Well, I think it's important that what you're doing, Joyce, you're reaching people all across America with information they're not getting from the controlled media, from the Rush Limbaughs and Sean Hannitys and other people who are paid so much at such high salaries not to reveal what's going on, but to conceal what's going on. Our guest is Joyce Riley, and as always, it's been a real pleasure to have us. To have you with us, please give my best to Dave.
Thank you so much.
Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and I hope you enjoyed our interview with Joyce Riley. The information she's putting out is not nice, but it's true. I've never known Joyce to put out anything that wasn't true. You need to understand that they're experimenting on our people and our soldiers. They've been experimenting on them for years. And if you doubt that, you need to get the Rockefeller Committee report. It actually came out from the Veterans Administration in 1994, and both Joyce and I circulate this. And it goes into all the macabre experiments that have been done with our boys, including the experiments that were used during the first Gulf War. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set on Vaccine A, an experimental vaccine that was given to our boys during the first Gulf War. And, of course, many of them were ill. Because of this, they put an adjuvant in there, called squalene, which is an experimental adjuvant. They've denied over and over and over again they used it, but, of course, they found the antibodies to the squalene in many of the Gulf War veterans who were ill. So understand that they were used as human guinea pigs. And they do this all the time. But, I mean, after all, we can't let the young idealistic American boys know that when they join the military service, now, of course, they can be used as guinea pigs and set off to fight and bleed and suffer and die, but never allowed to win the war in either Iraq or Afghanistan. We have a four-tape set on depleted uranium, a four-tape set on the Gulf War illness. But I think the most powerful product we have is something put out by Joyce Riley. It's called Beyond Treason. It's a DVD, and if you get it, you get a CD-ROM along with it, with hundreds and hundreds of pages of official government reports talking about how dangerous depleted uranium is. But, of course, they don't want the soldiers or the officers going into battle to understand that they're being poisoned not by the enemy, but by the people in the Pentagon who have a different agenda. Because I believe, of course, there's a powerful spiritual force that wants to destroy the young people of our country so that when we finally face the possibility of establishing a dictatorship, there'll be nobody to resist. They're destroying the lives of our young people. The DVD, again, one of the most powerful DVDs you've ever seen, Beyond Treason, and it comes with a free CD-ROM that will give you the documentation from government records, from official government records, that they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know what's going to happen to your sons and daughters when they volunteer. And they sign over and give their lives to people. Unfortunately, we have very, very courageous men and very courageous officers, but we have wicked people at the highest levels of our government who worship a different God. You need, of course, to get the 4 tape set on the Gulf War illness. You need to get the 4 tape set on depleted uranium. You need, of course, to get the 4 tape set on vaccine A, the experimental vaccine that was given to our troops during the first Gulf War, which is why so many are ill. And then the Rockefeller Committee report. And of course, they've done everything they could to suppress that. Fortunately, it is available through the Power Hour, which is, of course, Joyce's website, the Power Hour, and then, of course, through my website, RadioLiberty.com. And, of course, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And let me conclude with this. There's a graveyard near the White House where the unknown soldier lies, and the flowers there are sprinkled with the tears from Mother's eyes. I stood there not so long ago with roses for the brave, and suddenly I heard a voice speak from out the grave. I am the unknown soldier, the spirit voice began, and I think I have the right to ask some questions man to man. Are my buddies taken care of? Was the victory so sweet? Is that big reward they offered selling pencils on the street? Did they really win the freedom they battled to achieve? Do you still respect the croix de guerre above the empty sleeve? Does a gold star on the window now mean anything at all? I wonder how my old girl feels when she hears a bugle call. And that baby who sang, "Hello, Central, give me no man's land," can they replace her daddy with a military band? I wonder if the profiteers have satisfied their greed. I wonder if a soldier's mother ever is in need. I wonder if the kings who planned it all are really satisfied. They played their game of checkers, and 11 million died. I am the unknown soldier, and maybe I died in vain. But if I were alive and my country called, I'd do it all over again. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Arthur Burnclown. And Arthur is a veteran of the Vietnam War, but he's also a veterans advocate, and he works very hard to help the young men coming back from the first Gulf War and the Second Gulf War, to actually get benefits from the Veterans Administration, because, of course, the purpose of the Veterans Administration is not to provide care for our veterans or provide disability payments for our veterans. It's, of course, to limit their access to it, because, of course, there's only a certain amount of money. They have literally hundreds and hundreds, I think, well over 1,000 lawyers working for them, figuring out ways that they can cheat the veterans from getting the benefits that are guaranteed by Congress and promised by our government. And you have to understand, it's wonderful when you march off to war and you have ribbons on your chest and you're fighting for freedom. Well, at least you're told you're fighting for freedom. Actually, you're over there, of course, you know, of course, going ahead and killing a lot of men and women and children and imposing our form of tyranny on the people of Iraq. We're not giving them freedom. Why don't we just pull out our troops and let them have the, you know, develop their own country? Well, we can't possibly do that, because if we were to leave, there'd be chaos. But there wasn't chaos before we went in there. Admittedly, Saddam Hussein was there, but Saddam Hussein had been put in power by the CIA. He was actually in the late 1950s, he was a paid CIA assassin. We have the books written about that 10, 15 years ago. And, of course, he was kept in power all the during the 1980s with your tax money. And if you doubt that, we have a wonderful clipping we'll send you from the Washington Post, when an ally becomes an enemy. And then, of course, during the 1990s, when the military tried to overthrow Saddam Hussein, the Iraqi military tried to overthrow him, and the State Department, the American State Department, betrayed those military officers who were obviously, you know, arrested, tortured to death, thanks to the American State Department. And as Robert Baer says in his book, which we carry and available through Radio Liberty, the book is See No Evil. Robert Baer, who was a CIA agent working in Iraq at that time, said he never met an Iraqi who did not believe the American government was keeping Saddam Hussein in power. And yet, of course, now we're over there in Iraq, and all we admit it was a terrible mistake. But, and then the boys are coming home, those who do survive, suddenly have not lost an arm or a leg or lost their sight or have a brain injury or, of course, are deaf. Many of them, of course, have serious illness and disability and whatever it may be, whether it's related to depleted uranium or to some other experiments or the vaccines they've gotten or something else, we don't know. But Arthur Bernfeld's there trying to help them. Arthur, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Fran, for giving me the time to talk about these things and let the American public know what is really going on over there, and what's going on with our Veterans Administration and our Department of Defense, both of which has let down the American fighting man.
And of course, the thing I think that's so significant is this: so many of these veterans, when they're coming back, are committing suicide.
Oh,
and
yes.
And we're going to let you hope you're talking about.
I've got a slew of information on that right now.
All right, fine. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand these boys are coming back. And if they don't have psychological problems when they get here, they do, because they're being put on Prozac, which, of course, creates psychiatric problems as much as it helps, probably far more. It actually, a complication of taking Prozac is homicide and suicidal ideology. So many of them are committed suicide because of the drugs we're putting on them on. But at least then we don't have to pay them benefits.
The Veterans Administration.
All right, Arthur, go right ahead and pick up the story there.
I was going to say that's the Veterans Administration's answer to everything, Prozac and Paxil.
Right.
That's what they give these young fellows in the hospital.
Go ahead.
Okay, Washington. Increasing numbers of United States troops have left the military with damaged bodies and minds, an ever larger pool of disabled veterans that will cost the nation billions for decades to come, even as the total population of America's vets shrinks. And despite the decline in total vets, as soldiers from World War II and Korea die, the government expects to be spending $59 billion a year to compensate injured warriors in 25 years, up from today's $29 billion. That's $30 billion more. They expect that $29 billion to increase to $59 billion. Now, according to internal documents obtained by the Associated Press, these figures were compiled by the Associated Press and the Veterans Affairs Department, and the VA concedes the bill could be much, much higher. Now, why? Worse wounds, more disabilities, more veterans aware of the benefits and quicker to file for them. Seeing what happened to a lot of their friends who filed for them, and nothing happened for years and years, now what they do is immediately, when they get out, they file for their benefits. Now, also, ironically, advanced medical care. Troops come home with devastating injuries that might well have killed them in earlier wars, And time is also a factor. When it comes to disability compensation costs, payments tend to go up as veterans age, and an increasing number of soldiers from the Vietnam War will be getting bigger payments as they get older and are less able to work around their disabilities. Now, the number of disabled veterans has jumped by 25% since 2001 to 2.9 million. And the cause really is no mystery. This is a cost of war, says Steve Smithson. He's a deputy director at the American Legion. We're still producing veterans. We've been in a war in Iraq for 5 years now, and the so-called war on terror since 9/11. VA and Census Bureau figures show the previous six-year period before hostilities in Afghanistan and Iraq saw a more modest increase of 4% in the number of disabled vets. Veterans can make claims for disability benefits long after their military service has ended. There is no limit as when you can put in a claim. They tried to do that, and they were not able to do it. Today's veterans...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Arthur Bernclough. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Arthur's talking about, of course, the tremendous expense that's going to be involved taking care of our veterans, and certainly Joseph Stiglitz, who's an economist, Nobel Prize-winning economist, has written a book called The $3 Trillion War, talking about the expense of Iraq, and this would be if we were to get out right now, but he's anticipating the care of the veterans through the years is going to be staggering.
This,
before we're through with taking care of our veterans and paying for our veterans and their care in the years to come, we're talking about a $3 trillion war. And, of course, the president promised us. He said the oil revenues to Iraq will pay for the war. The Iraqis are going to pay for the war. After all, we're getting rid of Saddam Hussein for them. But, of course, they're keeping the money. We're having to put in more money every year to rebuild Iraq. Why don't the Iraqis build it? Why should they when we'll do it for them? But we don't have any money here to take care of our veterans. Go right ahead, Arthur.
Okay, today's veterans, disabled or not, number 24 million. That population is projected by the VA to fall under 15 million by the year 2033, mostly because of dying World War II and Korea War vets. But costs are expected to... to rise. The inflation accounts for a big chunk of the increase. But even when the VA factors cut out inflation, the compensation for disabled veterans would still grow from $29 billion to $33 billion in today's dollars, a more than 10% increase. And the department acknowledges the estimate could rise by 30%, not 10%, but by 30%. VA officials were not eager to talk about reasons for the increases. They declined several requests for interviews by AP and a written response to a handful of questions. The agency noted a few factors at play in the rising costs, such as the aging veterans population, an increase in the number of disabilities claimed, and the severity of injuries sustained. And outside experts provided more insight. American Legion Smithson said, "The Iraq and Afghanistan wars are resulting in more severe injuries, amputations, and traumatic burns, the kind of injuries that troops in Vietnam and earlier wars would not have survived." Smithson says today's veterans also are filing claims for more disabilities. People are more aware of the benefits that they are able to file for because of better outreach, Smithson said. It's not like the World War II generation and the Korean War generation, where they weren't aware of what they could file for, and they were also reluctant to file if they didn't think they needed it. Iraq veteran Christopher Bain filed for about 10 disabilities after his tour in 2004. Bain came under mortar fire outside of Baghdad and was hit several times. He successfully fought doctors who wanted to amputate his left arm, but 10 operations later, he still needs help getting dressed each day. An electrical stimulator implanted in his upper buttocks helps dull the pain from his injuries. "It's hard. You go through certain periods of remorse," said Bain. "I'm never going to be the man I once was." Bain suffers from tinnitus also, post-traumatic stress disorder, and serious injuries to his arms. He receives a check each month for $2,618 that helps the former Army Staff Sergeant pay the mortgage, food, and clothing costs for his family of five that live in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Bain is one of 755,000 veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Of that group, the VA says more than 181,000 of that group are collecting disability benefits. Another factor driving up costs and the overall number of disabled veterans is Vietnam. Veterans from that era make up the biggest group of vets today receiving disability compensation. At the end of 2006, more than 947,000 Vietnam vets were getting monthly checks. You see, an awful lot of Vietnam veterans over the course of the years have gone from a 30 to 40% disability rating up to 100% when their employment years start to wane a little bit. Conditions such as a bad back or knee can worsen with age and draw higher payments. A big concern for Vietnam vets is diabetes. Last year, more than 271,000 veterans were receiving disability benefits for diabetes. Most of the disabilities, 236,000 of the 271,000, will link to Agent Orange exposure.
And I think that's such an important point, Arthur, because the Agent Orange, which is dioxin, is known to produce cancer, is known to produce infertility, and they knew that, and they lied. They lied for 20 years about, of course, how they poisoned our boys in Vietnam, but it wasn't until the Clinton years that they began to get some compensation for it. The government frankly lied. You can go up on the internet and look up the dangers of dioxin. It's well known, of course, it's a carcinogen. It's well known it produces infertility and diabetes. And so why did the government lie about it? Well, of course, they didn't want to put out the money.
Right.
Who is this government? Why, it is a group of people who work behind the scenes, who control, you know, our government. You will never know who they are, but they certainly are not our elected officials. Congress tells the Veterans Administration to compensate the veterans, and the Veterans Administration's job is to do everything they can to avoid putting the money out. Do we have any idea, Arthur, how many veterans, you mentioned 140,000 veterans, certainly from Iraq and Afghanistan, are receiving disability, but my understanding is that there are hundreds of thousands have applied for disability benefits.
That's right.
They just never get around to seeing them.
Exactly.
Or if they do get around to seeing them, they turn them down. We're talking about hundreds of thousands. How many hundreds of thousands are there?
I'm going to get into that. I've got a whole slew of figures here.
Well, you go right ahead then.
Okay. Now, as I said before, 236,000 of the 271,000 were linked to Agent Orange exposure. Now, veterans who are approved for disability receive monthly checks for injuries or illnesses sustained or aggravated while on active duty, and ratings are scaled from 0 to 100% in 10% increments. A rating of 10%, for example, is given to tinnitus, or the ringing of the ears, which is increasingly common for troops returning from Afghanistan and Iraq because of roadside bombings. And ratings for post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury can range from 0 to 100% and from 10 to 100% respectively. Former Army Sergeant Michelle Saunders was rated at 70% by the VA after being shot at during a 2004 convoy mission in Iraq. The bullet was caught in her flak jacket, but she sustained painful injuries, including two ruptured discs in her lower back and nerve damage to her right leg. It's turned me from a really alive, happy person into somebody who is numb, and I don't know how to feel anymore, she said. Saunders gets a disability check each month from the VA for just under $800. That doesn't seem like very much, does it, Dr. Stan?
It sure doesn't go very far today, I'll tell you.
Nope. And actual benefits run from $1,404 for a veteran rated at 10% to about $26,000 and something for those rated at 100%.
I mean, $2,660
something doesn't seem like a hell of a lot either. Now, The VA secretary, that's Mr. Peek, the new VA secretary, he is denying the cover-up of suicide rates that's going on. And the veterans are now suing to improve the department's procedure, the VA's procedure. The VA is facing accusations that it covered up veteran suicide rates. Two veteran groups are suing the VA now, claiming that veteran suicides are rising at alarming rates, in large part because of VA failures. The groups, which the Los Angeles Times reported, are Washington-based Veterans for Common Sense and Santa Barbara, California-based Veterans United for Truth. They want the VA ordered to improve application processing speed and delivery of mental health care. That's another terrible thing that they're falling behind on, the mental health care. Now, Secretary of the VA, James B. Peek, he visited Charleston, South Carolina last week to meet with officials from Ralph H. Johnson VA Medical Center and the Medical University of South Carolina. And he claims the notion that we're not trying to get the truth out there is erroneous. That's what Peek says. The secretary told Congress in a February 5th letter that 144 combat veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan committed suicide between October 2001 and December 2005. And this is a blatant lie from the secretary of the VA. The figure of 144 combat vets. But a lawyer representing the veterans groups produced internal VA emails that contended 18 veterans a day were committing suicide. 18 veterans a day. The emails were written by Dr. Ira Katz, the agency's mental health director. Ronald Maris, a University of South Carolina sociology professor, testified last week in that trial in San Francisco. That's the one that the 800,000 veterans have filed out there. Every time you do a study, you have different samples, Maris said in the phone interview. Each study looks at different populations. Samples are not often complete. We make sure we're working off the same set of numbers, Peek said Monday. Maris and Peek are scheduled to testify again now this month before the U.S. House Committee on Veterans Affairs. Those numbers say veterans committed suicide at a rate that varies from 2 times that of the general population up to 7.5 times the rate of the general population, Maris said. The bottom line, he said, is everybody agrees the veterans rate is higher. Now, what are we going to do about it? Maris takes issue with the VA's mental health screening. Veterans are asked 2 questions. Whether they felt hopeless or depressed in the last 2 weeks, and whether they thought of hurting themselves in the same time period.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Arthur Burnclap. All right, Arthur, go right ahead.
Okay, if the veteran answers... No.
Go ahead.
Wow, is that my phone or yours?
No, it's my board. Go right ahead, Arthur.
Hello?
Go ahead.
I can't hear you.
Go right ahead. Can you hear me now?
If the veteran answers no, the questions stop. Let's take that from the last paragraph. Maris takes issue with the VA's mental health screening. Veterans are asked 2 questions, whether they felt hopeless or depressed in the last 2 weeks, and whether they thought of hurting themselves in the same time period. If the veteran says no, the questions stop. Maris says that's a serious problem, in my judgment, he said. Maris would prefer to see standardized paper and pencil tests with 15 to 20 questions. We need to be concerned about the whole panorama of self-destructive behaviors. Now, Secretary Peek also met with Tom Mikolajczak, a retired Air Force general and former commander of Charleston Air Force Base. Mikolajczak was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease about 5 years ago. Mikolajczak urged Peek to grant all veterans with the disease, also called amyotrophic lateral sclerosis.
Amyotrophic lateral sclerosis.
Right. A service-connected disability. Currently, only Gulf War veterans are covered. Mikolajczak said, my comrades in arms do not get the same benefits, and it's not fair. Now, for unknown reasons, veterans have a 60% higher chance of developing ALS. The retired general described the meeting as very personable. Now we just wait and pray, he said. This is Associated Press Jill Coley that provided this information for me. And we now go to the McClatchy Newspaper Service. And this came out of Les Blumenthal, reporter for the McClatchy News, reporter and columnist, from Washington, D.C. The Veterans Administration has lied about the number of veterans who have attempted suicide, a senator charged Wednesday, citing internal emails that put the number at 12,000 a year when the department was publicly saying it was fewer than 800. 12,000 a year. The suicide rate is a red alarm bell to all of us, said Senator Patty Murray, a Democrat of Washington. Murray also said that the VA's mental health programs are being overwhelmed by Iraq and Afghanistan war veterans, even as the department tries to downplay the situation. Senator Murray says, "We are not your enemy. We are your support team, and unless we get accurate information, we can't be there to do our jobs." Murray told this to Deputy Secretary of Veterans Affairs Gordon Mansfield during the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee hearing, which was another farce. Mansfield told Murray and the other senators that he didn't think the VA had deliberately tried to mislead Congress or the public. He didn't. They always do. Now, Murray remains skeptical, however, saying that the VA has demonstrated a pattern of misleading Congress about the increasing number of soldiers who served in Iraq and Afghanistan and are now seeking help and straining Defense Department and VA facilities and programs. Murray says she's spoken with VA Secretary James Peake and demanded that he fire the man in charge of the department's health programs, Dr. Ira Katz. Now, he's the guy, Ira Katz, and it's not a joke, let the cat out of the bag with his email.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Arthur Bernclough here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Arthur's simply talking about really what we know about veteran suicides. The government says about 80 had committed suicide over a period of a number of years. But, of course, these emails had gotten into got them into trouble, and when they were actually evaluated, they found that there were about 12,000 veterans who had committed suicide a year. That's about 1,000 a month. That's almost, about 25 a day, something where they're 18, 20. Joyce Riley's figure is about 200 a month, and about 200 a week. I think that's about right, 250 a week.
Veterans are committing suicide. 18 a day.
Right. Of course, if it's really that figure of 12,000, that would get up to about 25 a day.
Yeah.
But anyway, there are an awful lot of committing suicide, and they're simply not telling the American people the truth about that. Why would they lie? Because 18 a day, that would be 125 a week, between 125, perhaps more every week.
Yep.
They're lying. And, of course, one thing they can't let the American people know is that they're putting these people onto Prozac, and Prozac encourages suicide and encourages homicide.
Bet.
And so many of the veterans have actually killed the members of their family. And, of course, they had no defense. They didn't know why they'd done it. They didn't realize it was the Prozac that the government was putting them on. And then we wonder why we have, in the United States today, one in every 32 American adults is in prison, probation, or parole. And a lot of them are there because they committed terrible crimes under the influence of Prozac, which was given them to treat their depression. Go ahead, Arthur.
Okay, Senator Murray says, Peake. The VA Secretary, Peake, has yet to respond to her request. He has not even responded to her request. And she said, I used to teach preschool, and when you bring up a three-year-old and tell them they have to stop lying, they understand the consequences, Murray said. The VA doesn't understand the consequences. They need to stop hiding the fact that the war is costing us in so many ways. The existence of the emails, uncovered as part of a class-action lawsuit, filed against the VA in San Francisco, was first reported by CBS News almost 2 weeks ago. Our suicide prevention coordinators are identifying about 1,000 suicide attempts per month among the veterans we see in our medical facilities. Those are ones that are being treated right there in the medical facilities, about 1,000 suicide attempts a month. Now, Katz wrote, this is the same man that wrote the emails, wrote in a February 13th email to Ev Chasen, the department's communication director. Is this something we should carefully address ourselves in some sort of a release before somebody stumbles on it? Chasen responded, I think this is something we should discuss among ourselves before issuing a press release. That's how they got into trouble before they issued a press release. Is the fact that we are stopping them good news, or is the sheer number bad news? And this is more than we've ever seen before. Now, CBS reported the VA had provided it with data earlier that showed only 790 attempted suicides in all of the year 2007, a blatantly false figure. Now, how do we trust what you're saying when every time we turn around, we find that what you're saying publicly is different from what you're saying privately? Murray asked Mansfield. How can we trust what you are saying today? Now, this fellow Mansfield, who I mentioned a couple of times, if you saw that TV program about the three Iraq veterans and the guy from the VA was a man in a wheelchair, that's Mansfield. He's the assistant secretary there. And Mansfield responded that the situation was unfortunate and didn't send the right message to Congress or the public. I know Dr. Katz is a dedicated public servant, he said, and there isn't a lot the VA should be keeping secret. Murray pointed to a RAND Corporation study released a couple of weeks ago that found that 320,000 troops who served in Iraq and Afghanistan suffer from traumatic brain injuries, and over 300,000 troops suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder or major depression. Of those with PTSD or depression, Murray said, only half have sought treatment, and only half of those have received treatment that was minimally adequate. Minimally adequate. I think we ought to be worried, Murray said, adding that, as with Vietnam-era vets, some of the more violent symptoms might not show up for 50 years. They can be walking time bombs for decades, Murray said. I hope everybody in the VA understands this. Mansfield said the VA is spending $3 billion on mental health programs this fiscal year and has 17,000 mental health workers. We want to make sure we take care of these individuals, he said. Now, you know, this could have been nipped in the bud at the Senate Veterans Affairs hearing when they went to confirm this guy, Peek, and Senator Murray and all the other Democrats caved in, and this was supposed to be a Senate confirmation, Senate Veterans Affairs Committee confirmation for this guy. It wasn't a confirmation. It was more of a coronation.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Arthur Bernclau. We're simply talking about how the purpose of the Veterans Administration is not to provide health care for our veterans. It's to withhold health care from our veterans. And, of course, Arthur was saying about 140,000 veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan are getting benefits, but there are at least 300,000 or 400,000 yeah, more that have applied, and, of course, they just never get around to them. Oh, shucks, we're just, oh, well, we've got to get around to them one of these days, and if they survive. Go right ahead, Arthur.
Okay, the RAND study, it's a 500-page study, which was based in part on interviews with more than 1,900 soldiers, sailors, and Marines. It also said that only half the troops suffering disabilities do actually receive care. And in half of those cases, the care is only minimally adequate, as I had said before. There is a major health crisis facing those men and women who have served our nation in Iraq and Afghanistan, said Terry Tanelson, a RAND researcher who helped head the study. Unless they receive appropriate and effective care for these mental health conditions, there's going to be long-term consequences for them and for the rest of the nation. Now, the fear of stigma. The study said many service members will not seek treatment because they fear the stigma associated with psychological problems could harm their careers. So there's many, many people who are not even reporting this who are suffering from PTSD. Many, many people. And post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, it can result from wartime trauma such as suffering wounds or witnessing others being hurt. Symptoms include irritability or outbursts of anger, sleep difficulties, trouble concentrating, extreme vigilance, and an exaggerated startle response. Very exaggerated startle response. Rand recommended that the Pentagon create a way for service members to receive mental health service confidentially and to monitor the quality of care. Army Colonel Laurie Sutton, Director of U.S. Defense Center of Excellence for Psychological Health and Traumatic Brain Injury, said she welcomed the study. She was concerned at the finding that only half of those who sought help actually received the minimally adequate treatment, and said it would spur the military to try harder to recruit more mental health specialists. Now, this has been going on now for 6 years. They're trying to recruit more mental health specialists. But every time they try to recruit them, they get turned down and they say they don't have the money to afford it.
All right, I want you to hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Arthur Bernclough right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Arthur, before we go on, I want you to, of course, get your website out. I want you to get your address so that if somebody is out there, they're a veteran, can't get care, desperate to get care, we're getting the runaround of the Veterans Administration because, believe me, that's how the system is set up, is to delay and delay and delay and make mistake after mistake after mistake and then delay and delay and delay.
Yep.
So many times it'll take 7 years before, of course, you can be turned down the second time. And then you can get yourself a lawyer. I think now you can get yourself a lawyer earlier, but the whole system is really based upon cost-effectiveness, and it's most costly not to provide care for the veterans and to prepare to provide it and not to provide us any payments for disability than to provide it. So how can people get in touch with you, and what can you offer them, Arthur?
Okay, here's how to reach us. Our website is V, as in victory, VF. CLL, Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, .com. For those who want to contact me by telephone, my phone lines are always open to you. It's 631 area code 474-4261. If you want to write
Repeat that number. You always have to repeat it twice.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's 631 area code 474-4261. And to write us, we're Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, and we're located at 112 Jefferson Avenue, 112 Jefferson Avenue, and that's in Port Jefferson, New York, Port Jefferson, New York, 11777, and all telephone calls and all communications sent will be answered. Definitely. And if you're not answered the same day, you will be answered within a day or two for sure.
All right, fine. Okay, fine. We'll pick up the story there as far as the veterans is concerned. And of course, this conscious, organized, orchestrated effort to conceal the truth about the suicides from the American people. I mean, how could you possibly explain 1,000 suicide attempts a month? I don't know how many of them are successful, but apparently it's somewhere around 18 a day, which comes to about 125 a month, are successful. And suicide, this is an epidemic. And these
it's
are the
a terrible statistic, right. Dr. Stan. It's a terrible statistic, and they say the Army wants to hire 275 more civilian mental health professionals, but a tight labor market and difficulties getting civilians into war zone has slowed the effort. This is what officials say. Now, RAND is a private research organization, and they estimated that stress and depression among returning soldiers cost $6.2 billion in the 2 years following deployment, mainly due to lost productivity, medical costs, and a higher risk of suicide. And so you want to thank additional reporting by Andrew Gray and Alan Eisner and Will Dunham. And they've provided a lot of this information for me. Now, Actually, half the vets that are suffering brain and mind injuries go untreated. But the Pentagon is pretending that nothing is going on. Now, an activist travels to the DOD's annual suicide prevention conference, only to find the military brass living in their own parallel universe. Camouflage and khaki, wall to wall, Bob Ireland, an Air Force psychiatrist and consultant to the Air Force Surgeon General, welcomes the audience to the Department of Defense's sixth annual suicide prevention conference and makes jokes about how suicide prevention has been the DOD's bastard child, homeless and parentless. In January 2008, the child nobody wanted finally managed to find a home, the Defense Center of Excellence for Psychological Health and Traumatic Brain Injury, finally assumed responsibility for an issue and an injury that the military has hidden and denied for generations. It's been left up to Lieutenant Colonel Stephen Flans, the Senior Psychiatry Policy Analyst for the Air Force Surgeon General, to report on the mental health care practices that have been developed for those on active duty. Kerry Knox, Director of the VA Center for Excellence on Suicide Prevention, was scheduled to share with him these introductory remarks, but, of course, was not in attendance. That's standard. Apologies are made, but nobody mentions how obviously difficult it would be for her to get into the self-congratulatory spirit of this conference when her boss just got busted big time for hiding VA statistics. Not just to the media, but to Congress as well. This is the same Ira Katz we talked about, the VA's mental health director.
Arthur, let me ask you a question. Certainly, sure. Earlier you were saying well over 300,000 of our veterans returning from Afghanistan and Iraq have major brain injuries, in other words,
yes,
brain trauma. And then you refer to another over 300,000 who have post-traumatic stress. Is this a different 300,000? Are we
yes,
talking
it
about?
Yes, it is. It's a different 300,000.
All right. So, and I've seen these figures, and I thought that it had to be a different 300,000.
One is 320,000, and the other is 300,000.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, this is one of the greatest human tragedies of all time. Well, of course, the great human tragedy is the million people we've killed over in Iraq, and then, of course, we contaminated that area, depleted uranium. So, of these people will probably, most of them, or many of them, will die of the complications of the depleted uranium. But you go ahead and pick up this story
now,
there.
In another email, this Dr. Ira Katz acknowledged that an average of 18 war veterans a day managed to kill themselves each and every day. Five of the 18 a day are under VA care at that time. And, well, according to this, Katz is toast. He's going to be out. And the Democrats are already calling for him to resign, which seems rather mild considering how many lives were damaged by his attempts at damage controls. But, you know, you do the math. There's 12,000 veterans a year, VA patients trying to kill themselves. On top of that, the 6,570 who on average succeed each year, 1,825 of them are also patients at the VA. And how it is possible not to mention that kind of news at a conference on military suicides.
Now, but how many succeed in killing themselves each year?
6,570.
6,570 succeed. I mean, 10,000 try. 6,000 succeed.
Yeah.
6,570 succeed. How would you cover up something like that? Well, we have freedom of the press in the United States. Those people who own the press have the freedom to conceal the truth from the American people. Go right ahead.
Now, this must have been a challenging week for these conference organizers. How to deal with Katz letting everything slip out with the emails and the new RAND Corporation report, which is devastating to the VA and the Department of Defense in its description of DOD and VA failures. And the RAND report cannot be blown off as the ravings of a bunch of leftists with an anti-war agenda. RAND conducts research and analysis for the Office of the Secretary of Defense, the Joint Staff, the Unified Commands, the defense agencies, and the Department of the Navy and the U.S. intelligence community. And the report revealed that nearly 20% of military service members who have returned from Iraq and Afghanistan, and that's 300 men and women, have symptoms of post-traumatic stress or major depression. Of those, only slightly more than half, have sought VA treatment. Soldiers say that hesitation to seek help arises from fear it's going to harm their careers. People are afraid to report this because they're afraid the stigma is going to get out, and they're not going to be good for anything for the rest of their lives. They're afraid to report if there's something wrong with them.
Well, I think it's such a great human tragedy, and the average individual doesn't know because the media is covering this up. We have read a couple of articles about this lawsuit in San Francisco about trying to get better health care for the and medical psychiatric care for the veterans, but these figures, the number who are actually committing suicide every day, the number who are trying to commit suicide every day, the number who succeed, you know, we're not getting that. They don't want the American people to know, and
no,
they specifically don't want them to know that this much of this is a complication of the Prozac we're giving them. Why would you give our veterans a drug that would cause them to be suicidal and homicidal, and how many of them are in prison today because they've killed their loved ones? You're not hearing this aspect of the story. Go ahead, Arthur.
Okay, the same study, Rand's study, also estimates 320,000 service members may have experienced a traumatic brain injury during deployment, but only 43% reported ever being evaluated by a physician for that injury. Despite the DOD's policy that every soldier returning from Iraq be screened, Dr. Stan, it's not happening.
Well,
43% reported being evaluated by a physician. Only 43%. I would, of course, be very interested in the Department of Defense's response to all of these accusations. At the risk of oversimplification, whatever it is they're doing is not working, and it would be an obvious moment for a little humility and perhaps even an ideal audience to petition for new ideas. Instead, fans insist DOD has been living suicide prevention for a decade. After bombs on target, the next most important thing is suicide prevention. I overuse that phrase, he admits, but I think it drives home the point that we really do live and breathe suicide prevention. And I'm saying baloney. I'm taping this drivel, only listening with half an ear, and I'm reading about the trial that began a couple of weeks ago in San Francisco. The veterans groups are asking U.S. District Court Judge Samuel Conte, a World War II U.S. Army veteran, to order the VA to start providing immediate treatment for suicidal vets and prompt care for those suffering from post-traumatic stress.
And I'm very much afraid they're going to put them all on Prozac and we'll get more suicides and more homicides. Instead,
right,
of course, addressing what the real issues are. Go right ahead.
Now, government lawyers who are arguing for the Justice Department, who I call Just Us, they're arguing that the courts don't have the authority to tell the VA how it should operate. Can you imagine the nerve on these people? The courts don't have the authority to tell the VA how it should operate. Now, that, too, would seem pertinent at a conference like this, but the trial hasn't even been mentioned at that conference. Now, what brings my attention back to the room is a question that a man sitting at the end of my row of seats, in response to some of fans' brightly colored pie charts indicating what demographic of soldiers killing themselves, this man has asked whether or not these pie wedges on his charts take into account multiple deployments. That information is redacted, said fans, definitely. Definitively. Now, what? The questionnaire smiles ruefully. He's not surprised. I sense a friendly attitude and move over to sit next to him. Now, James Conover is a 3-tour Vietnam vet, a behavioral health specialist who has worked with veterans for 30 years. After he got out of the service, his life fell apart, and he admits that before he got it back together, he seriously contemplated throwing himself off the 7th floor balcony of his building. James takes this all very personally. Emboldened by my new ally, I asked if any of the services take into account what happened to their members after they come home. Are they counting their veteran suicides? We have no information on that, he answers, and refers me to Kerry Knox, who, as I mentioned before, of course, is not present. And as today's news also includes a story about the administration's decision to renege on their promise to end stop loss, I ask their studies take that into account. There is no easy access to any of this information, and it's utterly fantastic that all this stuff is happening at the same time, all of it intimately related to the purported subject of this conference, and all of it completely invisible. And this is what's going on with their conferences. And according to the RAND report, the new Defense Center of Excellence for Psychological Health and Traumatic Brain Injury and the new VA Center for Excellence on Suicide Prevention could provide a historic opportunity to change the culture of psychological health within the military. But, warned Terry Danielson, one of the lead researchers on the project, it's going to take system-level changes, not a series of small band-aids to improve treatments for these illnesses. And that's what they're doing. They're putting a band-aid on a big injury. That's exactly what they're doing. And it's heartbreaking and it's frightening about this conference that everything I saw presented looked like a band-aid, a mere cover-up for a wound that desperately needs serious attention. Either they don't know that or they don't care. And this is what's going on with our Pentagon and with our VA and with these poor young fellows and girls that are in there being injured in a war that we have no business being at. No business at all.
You're absolutely right. And, of course, the great tragedy is we say how wonderful it is that we want to support our troops, you know, get behind the boys. Anybody who wants to bring them home is a coward. He's a, you know, he has no, doesn't really want to bring chaos over there. If we don't fight the terrorists, Al-Qaeda over there in Baghdad, we'll be fighting them on the streets of New York. Ladies and gentlemen, we haven't had one terrorist attack in America.
Not at all.
Over 7 years, this whole thing is as phony as a $3 bill. They want an excuse to send our boys over there to fight and bleed and suffer and die. And those who do come home, of course, will not get adequate treatment. And many of their lives will be shattered forever. We need, of course, the American people to get involved. But where is the outcry from our Christian leaders? Where is the outcry from our political leaders? The only people, of course, who talk against the war are the Democrats. And then when push comes to shove, why they support and continue financing this no-win war that we're involved
in. Here's something. This is nothing new, Dr. Stan. We have a writer from the Associated Press down in Nashville, Tennessee, Marilyn Marchione. She has been writing about this going back to September of last year. She's been calling the shots exactly as they're happening, going back to September. Now we've got September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May. She's been writing about this same thing for 9 months, and nobody's been listening.
Well, Arthur, we're just about out of time. I want you to get your telephone number and your address out one more time.
Okay, for those who need help in fighting the VA and the Department of Defense, we'll try to help you all that we can, and the law is now with us. We are now allowed to have an attorney, and if you get an attorney, I will work with your attorney. In fact, I'll speak to him for you and evaluate him for you and let you know whether this man is going to do you some justice. We're Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited. I'm the executive director. I'm Arthur Bernklau. That's Bernklau. And you can reach our website, vfcll.com, vfcll.com, or you can call me at 631, area code 631-474-4261, 631-474-4261, or write me at Veterans for Constitutional Law, Limited, and we're located at 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York. Our zip code is 11777. That's 112 Jefferson Avenue, Port Jefferson, New York, 1-877-711-1777. And to join our organization, we do not have dues. There is no membership dues. If anyone wants to donate, donations, of course, are welcome. But we do not charge you dues, and we will try to help your case.
All right. I think Arthur does a great job. Well, Arthur, got about 2.5 minutes to wrap up the program for tonight.
Okay. Something has got to be done about this. And it goes back to the day one of the war here, Dr. Stan. We're in a country. We're interfering in the internal affairs of a country. We should have stayed there. We should have gotten rid of Saddam, who we, you were right, we did put him in power. We should have left immediately after getting him out of power. And here we stayed around. Now, why did we stay around? Because American business interests, private business interests here, are making a lot of money in that country. And that's the only reason that we have stayed. But who is suffering? Our young American people, our young American service people in there, are not only being wounded, killed and wounded, but they are being mentally crippled for the rest of their lives. This is something that should not be happening, and I think we should get out of there as fast as we can. And anyone who says, well, maybe by the end of 2009 we'll think of getting out, I mean, this is this is unconscionable that we stayed for this long and people are still talking like that.
Well, of course, John McCain says we should may have to be there for 100 years. We may have to be there for 100 years. Ladies and gentlemen, there are people who do not intend to ever pull our troops out of there. That's what it's really all about. John
That's
McCain,
right.
At least he's honest. He's telling you the truth. Sidney Rumsfeld said the war was going to last 50 years, and McCain saying it may last 100 years. And how many more young men and young women will have their lives shattered and destroyed? Our guest this evening has been Arthur Bernclough. It's been a great program, Arthur. I really appreciate it. And we look forward very much to having you back again with us next month as we...
Thank you very, very much for the opportunity to be heard by your listening audience, which I think is the best listening audience I've ever run across.
Well, we're fortunate to have the opportunity to reach people all across America, and hopefully the audience will continue growing. Anyway, till next month, God bless you, and thanks very much for being with us. Bye-bye. All right, fine, and I do hope our listeners enjoyed Arthur. We try to have him on every month. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly we enjoy having Arthur Bernclough with us every month. And if you need more information about his organization, you didn't get the number, you can always call our 800 number, and we'll relay the information, put you in touch with him. Our number is 1-800-544-8927 or 1-800-5- HIV, like the virus, war, because we are at war. America's under attack from within today, and there are wicked and evil people there in key positions of power who have a different agenda. For those of you who don't believe that they experiment on our troops, that they have destroyed the lives of many of your young men, not simply at the present time, but going back for 30 or 40 or maybe even 50 years, let me suggest the Rockefeller Committee report put out by the Veterans Administration in 1994 over the name of Senator Jay Rockefeller. I don't think he ever read it. I don't think it ever would have come out if he'd read it. But it tells about all the experiments, not only on the American servicemen, but on the American public, carried out with their knowledge, without their knowledge and consent, and the terrible complications of that. And then the Gulf War illness, and did you know that the wives of Gulf War veterans, 40% of them come down with the same disease, this non-existent psychological disease they keep telling us about. And, of course, there is an infectious component. They don't want the American people to know that they've destroyed the lives of our boys intentionally. That is, again, the Rockefeller Committee report. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set on Vaccine A, the experimental vaccine they gave our boys during the first Gulf War. We have a report, a four-tape set on the Gulf War illness. We have a four-tape set on depleted uranium. One of the most touching things we have is a DVD that was put out by our friend Joyce Riley called Beyond Treason. beyond treason. Of course, we're poisoning our boys and poisoning their minds, and one of the reasons for the suicide is because the depleted uranium attacks certain parts of the brain that have to do with their judgment and their emotional response. This DVD, Beyond Treason, it comes not only by itself, but there's a CD-ROM with literally hundreds of pages of government information, official government information. They know that they're destroying the lives of our young boys and girls, but they don't want them to know. They don't want the public to know. And everything's been done to suppress distribution of this. Beyond Treason, along with the other items we mentioned, the Rockefeller Committee report, the four-tape set on Vaccine A, the four-tape set on depleted uranium, the four-tape set on the Gulf War, and, of course, it's all, of course, related, of course, to what's going on over there. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Because America is under attack today, not from without, but from within. And, of course, if you have not seen Beyond Treason, why you need to get it? You need to get my talk on Don't Dare Call It Genocide. It's a DVD. My talk on planned population reduction. There is a plan to eliminate the vast majority of the people in the world, including your children, your grandchildren, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, even you, and you have no idea the degree of this plan. We also have, of course, National Security Study Memorandum 200 put out by the official government document over the name of Henry Kissinger in 1974, talking about how the major thrust of American foreign policy would be population control. And it's, of course, not only foreign policy, but domestic policy. We have, of course, my talk on the hidden agenda on water fluoridation. And there, of course, you'll read when a branch of Planned Parenthood says, how are we going to control the population? Let's keep the marriage.